Blog Talk Radio.
Are you feeling the good vibration, man? Ivy Eyes. And Rasta don't work for no CIA, nor do we work for Apple Computer, which is the theme of our show today. That was Bob Marley and the Wailers and Rastaman Vibration. Jay, how you doing, my Rastaman?
I'm doing fine.
Are you?
You, I understand, are a little bit banged up.
Oh, my God.
What happened?
I flipped over the handlebars on my bike on Friday. I've been riding my bike in Manhattan.
You literally flipped out, in other words.
Yeah, man. It was like I was passing a rollerblader. And there are two. I ride up the Hudson River Greenway. I'll make this brief as I can. Ride up the Hudson River Greenway every day. And there's two places where the cars have off-ramps off West Street onto something that's by the Hudson, and they have to cross the bike path. And there's two places where it's really, really dangerous. And in one of those two places, there's usually a cop there that makes them stop at the stop sign. Well, there was no cop. And I was passing a rollerblader who was on his cell phone, and it got me really pissed. I got really angry. When I see, I don't like rollerbladers. If you ask a bike rider, do they like rollerbladers? No. You know why they don't like them? Because they take up about three times their width. Because they're always going, and this way and that way.
Weaving.
And this guy is on the cell phone. So like
his weaving and cell phone.
And his attention is like anywhere but. And he's right. About to enter this dangerous intersection. I'm thinking, I got to get by this guy. Because I really, you know. And so I do. And then there's this car running the stop sign. And the guy's looking right at me. And, like, thinks he's looking at a car, and he's playing a game of chicken. He's saying, you're going to hit the brakes, not me. And, of course, not realizing that I don't have 8 tons of metal around me, seat belts and airbags. And so I hit the brakes, and I go, and next thing I realize, it's like there's no memory of anything in between that, and now I'm lying on the ground in a lump.
And were you hit by the car?
I was not hit by the car. I was hit by the pavement.
The pavement?
Well, I hit the pavement. I went
because
over the handlebars.
You stopped too quickly?
Yeah. Well, I hit, I mean, this is a new bike, so the brakes really, really work, Jay. I mean, and so I banged up all the things that bikers bang up, I've learned. And everybody tells me, oh, this is a rite of passage, you popped your cherry, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You get ribs. The only thing I didn't get, and I was wearing a helmet, okay, so
good.
Everybody asks, were
good.
You wearing a helmet? Yeah.
But then, right.
Of course, my head didn't hit anything, so I couldn't, you know.
You were wearing a helmet.
But
good.
I was totally wearing a helmet. And
so RSS is safe.
For the moment. I think RSS is safe even without me and the helmet.
I know, but you know what I mean with the helmet and Dave Weiner's brain.
Oh, please. I don't even want to think about it. But I scraped up my knee. I scraped up my elbow. I got my ribs involved in this whole mess.
Wow.
No collarbone, though. The
collarbone sometimes goes
as well. The collarbone, I understand, is the... Now, I actually have broken a collarbone once before, but that was in a car accident. So
are you going to get right back on your bike like we tell kids?
I'd love to. You know, really, it's the thing that really pisses me off the most is that I can't ride my bike, man.
Why?
Because I'm addicted. I'm a fiend. I love
Why can't you?
Oh, because I hurt way too much. I can't. I can't even get in and out of a cab.
Is your bike in good shape?
No, the bike was not that badly damaged. I blew out the front tire. The front tire's gone, but the wheel's all right, you know. But, no, it's me that's damaged. I mean, I'm not getting on a bike until I feel better. And people tell me that might be a week, might be 2 weeks. I might have to go to the doctor yet, so.
So but, isn't this also an introduction to the biking culture of New York and of cities?
Yeah. Well, you know, I grew up in New York, and I grew up in New York riding a bike. But I think things are a lot different.
Oh, yeah.
I did get hit by a car when I was a kid, though. So, yeah.
But it's a whole world, the biking world.
It is very much that. Yeah. I was a member of that when I was living in California. But it's a very different culture. In California, what you do is you go up and down the hills. And the hills are, you know, that's a challenge in its own right. But the cars aren't really... You know, they're not the big deal so much. I mean, yeah, they're a big deal everywhere. Cars really don't have any regard for bikes.
Well, cars and bikes, they're two tribes that don't mix.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, we don't stop at
And then there's
signs.
The rollerbladers and the pedestrians.
And pedestrians are clueless.
Yeah.
Pedestrians stop and have conversations in the middle of the bike path. Gotta love that. They have their little kids running around them. You go, ma'am, this is not a sidewalk. You know, this is not your sidewalk.
This is such a New York conversation here, because everybody's fighting over their square inch of
Manhattan. Yeah, but you know who dies, right? It's the bikers that die.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm very sorry that happened to you.
Well, I didn't die. Okay.
No, you didn't die.
You will not get to tell me that you're sorry that I died.
No.
You'll tell Adrian that. There'll be like an empty white. You know what you should do? You should paint this chair white and put little flowers on. Do you ever see the ghost bikes around the city? You know? They have them all over. And they're just those.
Tomb of the unknown biker.
Those are places where. No, they're anything but unknown. They mark the places where bikers were killed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I did not know about that.
Look it up on Wikipedia.
Well, what I meant is, I'm sorry to hear you had an accident and hurt yourself.
Oh, thanks, Jay. It's really sweet of you to say that.
And we hope you have a speedy recovery, right, Adrian? He's nodding vigorously.
Adrian's a biker, too. So Adrian, his first comment was, yeah, that happened to me.
Hey, you guys got the city government on your side. They're not making things better for pedestrians. They're not making things better for the cars.
They are making
things better for the bikers all over Manhattan.
New York
bike
is
lanes.
A very nice place for bike riding. It's very, very
you
nice.
Got, because you got Bloomberg convinced that you're helping the city.
Vote for Bloomberg.
In
what way are we helping the city?
By reducing pollution and congestion and creating a more environmentally safe
and being healthier,
people moving
too.
System.
We're also healthier.
And healthier,
and
right.
And happier.
Yeah.
And we're doing endorphins and...
yeah, exactly. You got the hormones going and everything.
I don't know about the hormones. Yeah, I guess the hormones come in there.
All right, we haven't rebooted any news yet.
Yeah, so which item would you like to reboot first? Oh, look, come on, man. This is rebooting the news.
I was in Chicago this weekend.
You were, I know.
From Thursday to Sunday morning. At a very inspiring event called the Block by Block Community News Summit that I helped to organize with my pal Michelle McClellan of the Reynolds Institute.
What made you call it a summit?
Well, that was.
Were you being cute or being
overly
aggrandizement?
I don't think it's either.
Over grandiose.
Maybe a little over grandiose, yeah.
When I think of summit, I think of Brezhnev and Reagan.
Yeah, I don't know how summit got in there. It wasn't my term. But
everybody calls these things summits, and I go, geez, this really seems
summity. It was a conference, except that it was a summit in this sense. I suppose you would still say this is hype, but we had about 75 of the leading born on the web local news sites and the owners and operators of those sites together in one room. And it was exciting because they're all struggling to do the same thing, which is to build these local news sites.
So what were some of the ones that were there?
Well-known ones like baristanet.com in New Jersey, Oakland Local, Berkeley Side was there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who was there from Berkeley Side?
Lance's wife.
Oh, Tracy.
Tracy was
there. That's great.
The St. Louis Beacon.
What about Lisa Williams? Was she there?
Lisa Williams was there, yes.
She's
absolutely.
From
Place Blogger.
Watertown, right?
Place Blogger and Watertown. West Seattle Blog, which is a terrific local news blog in West Seattle, was there. Voice of San Diego. And a lot of smaller ones from places like Charlottesville, Virginia, and many other communities in the United States. And my feeling was that these people are a key part of the new news system, that they have common problems and would benefit by meeting each other, and that we ought to recognize how important they are in the new news system and give them what help we can. So what was great about it is that you didn't really need much of a program. There weren't any speeches. There weren't any lectures at all. It was mostly people meeting each other and talking about how they do what they do and what they're struggling with, much of which involved the whole sustainability puzzle, not just business in a narrow sense, but just how do I keep doing what I love doing?
You mean keep doing the local blogging,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then we scheduled, because the Tribune, Chicago Tribune, which is, of course, is the 600-pound gorilla in Chicago news culture.
It's a great paper.
Hosted a reception for the group at the end of the conference in the Tribune Tower when it was over. And what I loved about it is that we spent a day and a half talking about one form of journalism, and then everybody got to kind of like go into this temple of big media when it was over and contrast that form of journalism with what we had been grappling with. So that was pretty cool.
Did it feel humbling?
No, it was the opposite. It was more like it was more like visiting the cathedral of a religion that was passing somewhat.
Yeah.
And not to say that the Tribune.
You know, that's actually interesting. Can I comment on that?
Sure.
Yeah. I was watching the a conference from Washington D.C. on a webcast. And New Media Jim was hosting a panel, and they had journalists on there. And they were actually saying some friendly words about bloggers, but it was the same old, you know, well, you still need what we do, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And of course, they were thinking the same thing that they always think, is that what we're doing, you know, guys like me, is exactly what they're doing, which is it couldn't be further from the truth. We're not trying to be journalists. We're doing something else. But while I was listening to them, this is something that hit me, is that these people have already made the transition. And they're not acknowledging that. They still have the hyperbole from the old days that say...
What transition do you mean?
The transition is that they're now more like us than they are like they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
They had a guy there who was the White House correspondent from CBS News who is tweeting now, and the way he describes it, God, they're the same words I would have used when I was at Wired, that I didn't like being edited. So thing he loved about Twitter was his editor isn't in the loop.
Mm-hmm.
He can go straight right to the readers.
So they've passed some transition point, you're saying.
Oh, totally. Everything about it seemed, they were more talking about the world that we both live in, that we all live in. And it felt very strong to me like they had left the old world behind, and there really wasn't anything left of that.
I know exactly what you mean.
You know, and that, you know, so, you know, I would like to talk about how, you know, everybody thinks that the reboot is in the future, but our claim is that
we're doing it
right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that actually at some point we're going to wake up and realize that we're talking about something that's completely happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that all that's left are the vestigial, the words that are used that nobody believes anyway.
Well, that building is connected to that.
Right. The building is the vestige, right? It's the symbol of that.
Yeah, because it really is a cathedral. It even looks a little bit like a cathedral.
Well, Chicago, I went to school in Madison, so Chicago Tribune was our local great paper.
Yeah.
And it has very much, like, in that area, very much the New York Times type feel. It's the authoritative paper in the Midwest.
True,
you know?
Except that Chicago itself, and this is one of the reasons we held this meeting there, has an amazing local ecosystem of new media and local sites and blog sites and all kinds of talent in that ecosystem. That's really
and were
exciting.
They there at your conference?
Oh yeah,
I
they
wish
were all
I'd
there.
Been there.
Everybody
yeah.
was there.
Sorry,
and
I wasn't
two
there.
Things that I want to point out. One is one of the most powerful things that can happen at any conference happened at this one, which is simply people saying, "I thought I was alone, and I'm not."
Huh.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say something else, but yeah.
I thought I was struggling
with
this myself.
Well, who said that? I mean, who didn't know there weren't other people doing what they were
doing?
No,
it's not that they didn't know there were other people
doing
it.
They didn't have the feeling of it.
The feeling that they're struggling with the same things.
Why are they struggling? That's what I don't understand. I mean, you know, I think they, you know, why are they struggling? Let me just ask that as a question.
Well,
because
running one of these local sites, Dave, takes everything you have.
Oh, I see.
And
you don't have time to have another job.
You don't have time to think about the national picture. You don't have
No. But don't you have time to earn a living? I mean, aren't you earning a living doing something else?
Some of them are. Some of them are trying to make this their living. But
I think that's where you're going to run into trouble. If you try to especially at this stage, make it your living. You're asking it to do something that it can't do, and you're asking the rest of us to believe that you have that as a right, and, well, until you actually can do it, you don't have it.
Nobody had felt it was a right.
I know, but I had this discussion many times with people that once they sort of take on the mantle, they feel they all of a sudden inherit all of the same entitlement that a professional journalist has.
Well, nobody owes you a living, and you have a right to an income.
Well, that's the objective truth, yeah. Right? The question is, does your actual words out of your mouth agree with that objective truth?
Here's the other thing that happened. Once we had all these sites signed up and coming, AOL called us up and said, can we come?
Hmm.
Yahoo, guy from Yahoo News.
So, what did you say?
Said, we really want to be there.
Yeah.
Well, taking a page from your book, I said, okay, we want some sponsorship money. You get no place in the program at all. No speech, no presentation, no selling. And if you want to come and listen, fine.
Well, couldn't they have just come without giving you sponsorship money?
They could, yeah. But we wanted, the event wasn't for them.
Oh, I see. They thought they could get up on stage and then tell everybody.
Well, they probably would have liked that. Right. But what turned out is that Patch, which is AOL's hyperlocal news sites that are sprouting up, as you know, around the country, represented a real source of threat and anxiety to a lot of these people. And there was a lot of suspicion and doubt sort of coming Patch's way. And that burst into the open at the conference, which was also kind of interesting. Anyway,
well,
that's where I was.
Well, that's good. If it's real, you want that to burst out.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. It was much better than letting it just lie there unspoken.
Yeah. Well, it should never get to the point where it feels like that space is their platform.
Exactly.
You know, we already have to live with that in too many places, you know, with the... I think that people may be just beginning to waken up to realize that Twitter and Facebook are not public platforms, you know. And there you have to deal with it. But in this space, you should never have to deal with it.
Right.
You know? There was this press release I got about all these recording artists that were protesting in favor of net neutrality. And how were they doing this? They were going to tweet and they were going to post things on Facebook. And I sent an email back to the publicist because I was included on this. I said, there's something really wrong for you doing this. You know, they didn't understand what I said. And then when I tweeted it, nobody understood what I was saying. Everybody said, well, Dave doesn't get it. Dave doesn't understand what net neutrality is. And I would say, no. In fact, I kind of think I do. Is that, you know...
Don't use non-neutral platforms to get the message out.
In the Twitter world, there is no such thing as net neutrality. I mean, they get the ability to determine who has 18 billion followers. That seems to be not a very neutral platform to me. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, whatever. I mean... The good news is the advertising industry is not interested in Twitter promoted tweets. This is the news that just came out today, so that's very nice. Yeah, I mean, well, they view it the same way. Twitter has said, "Oh, well, we're just experimenting." So guess what? The advertising industry sees it as an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they don't spend a lot of bucks on experiments. Mm-hmm. They spend a lot of bucks on advertising,
right?
You know, and.
When your boss says, what am I getting for that advertising budget I just gave you?
You're getting an experiment.
If you say, well, you got it. We're experimenting.
Right.
That's not a good answer.
And what's the bill? $100,000 per. Mm-hmm. And what is, you know, doesn't get you anything.
Angelgate. Do we want to spend a minute or two on that?
I don't know. I mean, it was,
Let's summarize what happened.
What happened? Mike Arrington, if you believe what Mike Arrington says, and I guess there's no reason not to believe it. He heard about a meeting of venture capitalists at a San Francisco restaurant, angel investors, which is a different special kind of venture capitalist. And he decided, even though he wasn't invited to this meeting, he would go there anyway, since he was friends with all of these people, which, by the way, in itself seems like a revelation. So he walked in, according to his story, and said, hey, what are you guys talking about? And everybody shut up. He wondered why were they shutting up, and they asked him to leave, and so he left, and then he went home, and he got some emails from, again, he claims, because he provided no names on any of this stuff, he provided no names on the people that were in the room. As far as we know, nobody confirms that there was actually even a meeting, you know. It's all, like, nameless stuff.
And but according to the information...
Oh, they were colluding. Yeah.
About terms they should offer.
Yeah, but Jay, let me tell you something. There ain't nothing new about this in Silicon Valley. This is not news. That investors do this, this is, like, not news. The news, the major news I thought was in there was the admission that he goes to those meetings.
Okay.
That a journalist would be, supposedly, whatever it is he is, isn't there... what the hell is he doing in these meetings? You know, the answer is that TechCrunch is more an arm of the industry than it is, you know, whatever. I don't know what it's supposed to be, you know. Is it supposed to be information for users about tech products? I don't think that they can realistically claim to be that anymore. At the inception, at the outset, they were very much that.
Now they're just a part of Silicon Valley.
They're a house organ, basically. For the
house organ of...
venture industry.
For the venture industry.
So for him to go to this meeting and say that there was anything out of the ordinary is very Pollyanna-ish. He knows very well, okay, that this is the norm. And it always has been the norm. There is a very... You know, he could go a lot further in this story, and he's not going a lot further in it. You know, in that there's a herd mentality in the VC industry. They are very narrow in terms of what things they invest in. There's no little rhyme or reason to it. There's a lot of vanity involved in that industry. They think they really understand the products, but yet, you know, they'll invest in one competitor in a market, but they won't invest in any of the others because they only want to invest in the things that their competitors are investing in. It's really not a very open, free market.
Well, hold on a second, Dave. If what Arrington said was going on at these meetings was going on, that is, angel investors meeting to collude
to set
about
prices, basically.
Terms and
right.
set
yeah.
prices
right.
with...
It's illegal.
That's illegal.
Of
that is
it
a
is.
Crime.
Right, but...
So that's not just the same thing as a herd mentality,
well,
is it?
Well, no. Well, yeah, it is, in a way. See, what I would... You know, I don't think there's... If he would go all the way on this, in other words, you know, if he wouldn't just stop at a certain place... And say, okay, I can't go any further because
go all the way. Like, tell us who was there.
Right, like tell us who was there. Why not? I mean, why not tell us who was there? Exactly. Uh-huh. I mean, well, not just that. Tell us about all the things these guys do. You know, because
It was kind of like burning half your bridges.
He's not burning any of his bridges. I mean, he's very much a member of
the on-ramp to to a bridge.
He's being a bad boy.
Okay, being a bad boy.
Which is what they kind of expect
of
him.
But that's sort of his persona. Yeah.
Fine. If you want to be like a muckraking investigative journalist, then you cannot pull your punches and you need to go all the way.
Okay, so what would you do if you heard there was this
meeting? I would never do any of that.
You would never go?
I left Silicon Valley, Jay. I mean, that was my answer.
All right.
You know, I realized that this is, it. As far as I'm concerned, they're entitled to do whatever the... I mean, I understand it's illegal and everything, but one answer to that is to just pull yourself out of the system and go somewhere else and see what you can do with your life as opposed to committing yourself to fighting it because, you know... You have to choose. You have to make a choice what you're going to do with your life. I prefer to be a technologist. I prefer to be somebody who creates new technology. I do not prefer to be somebody whose job it is to reform the VC industry. This is not going to get me anywhere. They're not going to reform.
Gotcha.
Okay? And it's not going to get me anything, and it's not going to get my users anything. It's a pointless exercise. Silicon Valley is going to be what it is, and... Well,
okay,
nothing I can do is going to change it. Nothing Mike Arrington can do. If Mike Arrington were about changing Silicon Valley and really were consistently doing it, I would support the hell out of him. But that isn't what he's about. Okay?
We're moving on.
Yeah. Ping. Maybe we should talk about Ping briefly.
Okay.
Ping addressed one of the major issues that everybody had with it.
This is Apple's Ping,
Apple's
new service.
Apple's Ping. They decided they came out saying this was a social network for music,
mm-hmm.
which is a very powerful thing for a company in Apple's position to do. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, if you or I came out with a social network for music, or you know, you shrug your shoulder and say, "Well, yeah, well, nobody buys music from Jay or Dave, so what difference does that make?"
Right.
But with Apple, Everybody buys their music from Apple, or a lot of people
pretty
do.
Pretty much, yeah.
More people buy music from Apple than from anywhere else.
Right.
So, but their social network was anything but. Now it is. I mean, you could not like a song that you were playing. You couldn't write a post about a song that you were playing. You could only, the only way you could create content on this thing was to buy a song.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, show us your motives more clearly, Apple. I mean, yeah, you want us to buy songs, of course. But
so they listened, you're saying?
Apparently. Or maybe they were planning on doing all along. See, this is the thing you always have to anticipate. When you criticize a product, or let's say you try to compete with a product, they're processes. They're not things that are fixed in time.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, Ping didn't have this feature 2-3 weeks ago, but now it does. Right? It still has a weird thing. Is like, you can't like a song that isn't in the store.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can't like a Beatles song. Even
right.
if you have it playing in iTunes, you get a dialogue that comes up and says, well, sorry, we don't know anything about that song, never heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you like Norwegian Wood, they don't know what Norwegian Wood is. You know, I want to hold your hand, we never heard of it. So, it's, you know, it's still got a bit of Apple there, and there's still, it isn't available in a web browser, which, you know, they got. But you got to give them some credit. You know, this is a big step for them. I think, you know, my guess is what happened was is that a lot of people inside Apple knew that this was a brain-damaged way to do a social network, and they lost the argument inside the company prior to release because, you know, the boss of the company and his, you know, lieutenants all, you know, have a very weird idea about how the world relates to them, and the guys who were in favor of a real social network won the argument. All they had to do was show this is how the world reacted to this, and there isn't a single person, not even our fans, like what we did. So
hold on, you said they lost the argument initially, then they released a product, and they said...
Well, this is my guess.
Okay.
I have no evidence of this whatsoever.
Okay, hold on 1 second there. What's interesting to me about that is a situation like that where you have an internal struggle, and one side loses the argument, it has been for hundreds of years... the conditions in which leaks happen. That's how leaks happen.
Right, right.
And one of the striking things about Apple, which we can use to transition into our next subject about Apple press coverage, is that you don't get too many leaks from Apple.
No, and I know, I've lived that firsthand.
Right?
I was there when Steve Jobs clamped down, and I had sources inside Apple. In fact, the one that he clamped down on was my source. And this was a person, I won't even say what the person's gender was, who was leaking constantly to me, and I had always the best information about Apple because of 2 or 3 people that were like just open pipes. And there was this meeting that Steve had with this person, and
why was he leaking to you?
Why? I don't know. Because we had a relationship.
Aha! Uh-huh. See, because you just confirmed it was male.
Did I? I did not. No, I just let your pronouns stand there, Jay. I didn't. No. I didn't confirm anything. Come on.
Why was this person leaking to you?
Because we had a relationship. Because
okay.
I knew this person. Because leaks were very common out of Apple. Apple was the leakiest company out there.
Not anymore.
No, and that was the moment. You know, how did they find out that this person was leaking to me? Because they were sending email to me from inside of Apple and going through their servers.
Well, there you go.
And all they had to do was say, show me all the mail that went to Dave Weiner.
Right.
And there you had it. I mean, so, you know, I felt a little bit responsible for this. You know, not really. And I don't know if the person got fired. I just never heard from this person again.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they dropped off the face
right.
of the earth. That
yeah.
was the end of that, you know.
Hmm.
It was an amazing moment and how total it is. And, you know, guess what? It has its downside, right? Because there was no leakage of this product prior to its release, they had no chance to find out what the world thought of it beforehand.
Well, that's always been the defense of leaking, is that it's a kind of a safety valve.
Well, but then
again, it shows you where there is pressure, right?
Right, but in this case, I think that it worked out fine. I mean, Apple, you know, there was nobody died because this feature came out so brain dead. In fact, we got to learn quite a bit about how the thinking works inside of Apple, so I don't have any complaints
yeah.
about that. And then they fixed the problem.
Fixed it, yeah.
Right, they fixed it. So that's
good.
net, it's good, I guess. It's not so good if you're Facebook because, you know, I mean, it's not so bad if you're Facebook either, but I think that they would prefer to have Apple have a lame social network, but, you know, that wish is a, you know, you can't expect your competitors to be incompetent. That's that's asking a lot, right?
Well, for me, it's sort of like one Goliath wrestling with another,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the Davids get to watch. And I'm increasingly pissed off at Facebook.
Are you?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's something we've talked about quite a bit. I actually cared about FriendFeed. I actually got a lot of use out of it.
I didn't know that.
And they just decided they were going to buy it and break it, intentionally break it, so that nobody could use it anymore.
What?
Well, it doesn't work, Dave.
FriendFeed?
It doesn't work.
But why do you... But you're inferring a whole lot there. I doubt what you said is true.
Well, it's broken all the time.
Well, of course it's broken. I could have told you that was going to happen.
But, exactly.
But that wasn't like Facebook didn't acquire a company with that as its objective.
No, they wanted the people who built it.
I understand. Right,
right. So they got them. But now FriendFeed is broken all the time.
Well, okay, but look at it from their point of view. I mean, you know that I don't look at things from the company's point of view generally, but
all right,
what should they have done? Let me ask you that. What would you have them do?
Keep up the product.
Why?
Because a lot of people used it.
A lot? Really?
Well,
compared to the number of people who use Facebook? Is it if you were Facebook, let me ask you that way.
What are you talking about? That you say they have no obligation to the users of a system that was built and that accepted all of their content?
Of course they have no obligation to the users.
Oh, whatever. All right.
Well, Jay...
This is the opposite of what you've argued 55 times on this program.
No.
Okay. They have no obligation to the users whatsoever.
No,
Dave Weiner says.
No, Jay. If you read the user agreement, you'll see that they have no obligation.
Okay, legally they have no obligation.
Okay, and I'll then
agree with you with that.
But you see, the point is actually my point isn't has never been. This is really interesting that you concluded that from it because it's not my position. My position is the users need to be smart, and they need to start making choices that are in their interest. So you, depending on FriendFeed, was a very naive choice. You're the one that's responsible for your dependence on FriendFeed.
All right.
You know, and the way to cure that is to not make that same mistake again. Yet we're all making that mistake. You know, I'm not saying that you're special. I make that mistake too. But in the aftermath of like Twitter, you know, Twitter is gradually withdrawing from every idea that they put out there that, you know, we could all have fun alongside of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's all being pulled back one step at a time. Can I blame them for that? No. Can I blame myself for having taken...
Well, I can blame myself, and I can also blame them.
No. In fact, I think that we need to, at some point, take responsibility for ourselves and stop believing that these companies have our interests at heart. They don't.
They don't have an interest at heart.
They do not.
And they lie about their intentions.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course they do. Now stop believing it, okay? Next time they make a promise to you that their hearts are good, don't... Come on, Jay. This is... Come on.
You know who got me on the friend fee?
I did. I did.
I know.
Well, but you see, my objective wasn't to break your heart, Jay. My objective was to show you something that looked interesting
that we should
learn from.
I'm still pissed off at them.
I'm not.
I'm going to learn from my experience as well. But
I learned a lot from FriendFeed, and I don't go there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I didn't know is that you liked it. I didn't get that.
I find the search function very useful.
You still use it?
Yeah, I try to, but it's broken most of the time.
It should be. They should have had the guts to turn it off when they got acquired.
All right, so turn it off.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's...
Tell us you're turning it off. Don't give me this nonsense about FriendFeed still important to us. We'll keep it up. We'll keep innovating, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, they were lying totally about that. And,
right.
You know, I have had a company... I have had a Silicon Valley company acquired, and I suspected that we would not be able to continue to keep our users happy when we sold it. And now if I were to go back and do that again, I wouldn't have just suspected it. I would have known it.
Yeah.
And I would have never, but I don't think I ever told them at the time. And of course, communication was nowhere near as good before. Problem with, for FriendFeed was, is that they had the means to answer the question. And, you know, but never make that promise. When you get acquired, you get, selling out, you know what the word, you sometimes think that the word sell out or the phrase sell out has two meanings. It doesn't. It only has one. When you sell out, you're selling out. You know what I mean about the two meanings? You know, you say, oh, that guy, he sold out. He sold out. He's now, you know, completely screwed up because he sold out. Well, but when you sell out, you sell out. Now right. Your motives are the motives of the person you sold to.
Mm-hmm.
They are now the boss, and they call the shots. And if you don't get that, you shouldn't sell out.
But
but Jay, one more thing. The FriendFeed guys totally got that.
Yeah, they know that.
Brett Taylor is the CTO of Facebook now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a powerful dude.
Yeah, that's right.
Smart one, too.
That's right.
Right.
They should have...
very interesting.
They should have said, we are now going to proceed to strangle FriendFeed. That's what they should have said.
Well, the honest thing to say would be this is a very low priority for us.
Yeah.
And I think it's amazing that they let them do anything continuing with FriendFeed, that they didn't tell them just to shut it down.
Well, they probably will soon. All right, Apple in the press.
Yep.
Pew Research Center, which studies trends in journalism, took a year-long look at technology news coverage. Now, this would mostly be technology news coverage in the mainstream press as opposed to the trade, and found that 15.1% of all technology articles were primarily about Apple, 11.4% were about Google, and 3% about Microsoft.
Say those numbers again.
Okay, this is all tech coverage.
Right, I got it.
Not just company coverage, but all tech coverage.
Right.
Right?
It was what?
15.1% of all tech coverage
was Apple.
Was about Apple.
11 was Google.
11.4 about Google, and 3% about
Do they
Microsoft.
Have trends on that? Do they show you what those numbers were a year ago and 2 years ago?
I don't think they did it longitudinally.
It would be really interesting to see how that's been changing.
Yeah. So what does this tell us?
Well, Apple has more or less grabbed the conversation, and Google's out. I had this suspicion when Apple and Google started fighting, okay? You know, because they did. They used to be great friends, right? Eric Schmidt was on Apple's board of directors.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He left a while ago.
Right. I had a feeling that that was all sock puppet stuff, you know? That that they sat down with their PR people, and they said, you know, we finally now have it within our ability to completely crush Microsoft. Why don't we do that? And so that Schmidt and Jobs said to their strategists, they said, well, that's an interesting idea. How do we go about doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Said, well, it's very simple. You guys just need to start fighting. and
conflict makes news.
Well, and it completely puts Microsoft in the margins. I mean, there's no room for Microsoft in the middle of the fight between Apple and Google. It's just too interesting, you know? And
listen to this, Dave. The biggest single event or storyline of the year was the perils of technology implied in texting while driving.
Whoa.
Nearly 1 in 10 technology stories was about this subject, more than 5 times the coverage of either plans for broadband access, 6 times the coverage devoted to net neutrality, texting while driving.
Why are you laughing?
Because it illuminates how crazy some of the priorities of the news system are. Now that I don't understand why a story like that would get the coverage it does.
Why does it get coverage?
Why?
Yeah.
Two reasons. One is it's very easy to understand and relate to, because probably you know somebody who does that or you do it yourself. And secondly, it was actually a safety hazard that government agencies began to take action on, like passing laws about it and stuff like that. And so that makes it very reportable. So it's an event that had been gathering for a long time, as long as people have been texting and driving, but it assumed reportable shape with efforts to combat it.
Right.
Yeah. And it's something that makes technology very instantly graspable.
It's right? easy. It's also easy to have positions on both sides of it. That
yeah,
are,
right.
That
lends
are righteous.
Itself to debate. That's
right.
Another
that
reason.
Are sort of like, well, I have the right to do this, and
right.
nobody can, you know, take my gun out of my hand with from my dead, you know,
yes.
whatever.
And that neutrality has so many defects as a news story.
It does.
An editor would roll his or her
its
eyes.
Its main defect is that it's impossible. In other words, once you fully understand the idea, you can't have it.
Its main defect is that it's about something that could happen.
It's not even desirable. This was
that's a different argument.
Well, it was pointed out to me. I was having dinner the other night with the technology editor of The Economist. In a group dinner. And
who's
and,
that?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me that. I'm bad with
that's
names,
all right.
You know. Bright, really brilliant guy, and he was saying that that if you had net neutrality, then spammers would be able, then you couldn't stop spam because they would say, well,
they would have the same access.
I have equal access as anybody else. You don't like my stuff? Well, I'm sorry, but you know you can't deprive me access to the internet because you don't like me.
Right.
You know, and so we obviously can't have net neutrality. The net, our governance of the net has to be non-neutral mm-hmm. because there are things like, you know, child pornography that we don't want out there. You know, there's all these things that, you know, you want to regulate. You know, if somebody's plotting to put an atom suitcase bomb, a bomb in the middle of Manhattan, you want to be able to stop that. I think we all believe that that's a legitimate thing to you know. But that's not.
Does that really undermine the case for?
That's not net neutrality.
Net neutrality?
Yeah, well, I'm saying
that's
you can't.
Like saying you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, right?
Right.
Therefore, well, free speech is an illusion.
Well, okay. I mean, you know, then, but you see, there's no such thing as net neutrality. We can't. I mean, I'm not saying that we want. I don't want it.
Okay.
I don't want net neutrality. I'm not one of those guys. I think there are bigger fish to fry. I think there are more important things.
I disagree with you about that.
All right. Well, fair enough. I mean, I think net neutrality, I think we have to, then if we want to, then we have to understand that net neutrality applies to every level in the stack. That it's naive to think that you could have net neutrality at one level without having it at every level. Well, people don't seem to want to even talk about that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, one thing's for sure, we don't have a very clear or good discussion about net neutrality.
Right.
And things get confused very quickly.
Well, we don't even have a good discussion about the role of economic stimulus and whether or not we should have deficits or in the national debt. I mean, we can't get our act together today to talk about climate change.
No, we can't.
We can't even have a conversation about it.
That's right.
Right.
In fact, so, we're going backwards.
Yeah. So.
And the second biggest tech story of the year was the launch of the Apple iPhone. Texting while driving, launch of the Apple iPhone.
Well, not Antennagate, huh? That never showed up on the.
Maybe that's included.
Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, right? that must be included, yeah.
I think that had to have been a big story because otherwise, why did it get Apple so upset? I think that was the real story about that one. You know, this brings me back that the tech coverage has always been this way, or at least in my memory.
Which way?
That it's always had just a few stories that they
uh-huh.
were able to report on.
Yeah.
I wrote a piece in.
Well, there's a power law to coverage.
In
like
1997,
that
because I was 90 so seconds. Fed up, I said, every tech story is one of three stories. It's either Microsoft is evil, Apple is dead, or Java is the future.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's why
of the three of those things, you know, I don't think any of them is still the story, right? And none of them turned out to. Well, maybe Microsoft being evil was turned out to be true. Apple certainly wasn't dead, and Java certainly wasn't the future.
That's
right?
Why you should take a look at this post, "Designing Journalism to Be Used by
seconds.
Jonathan Stray," which maybe we can talk about next time.
Yeah, we only have 60 seconds. Yeah,
right. You'll find that many of the ideas we batted around on this show are.
Well, we have more things to get back to, too. We did not get back to the thing we were left hanging at the end of the last show, which was the
Apple subscriptions.
No, the New York Times. I'm not remembering exactly what it was, but it was.
It's the bike fall.
Yeah. Oh,
right.
My God.
It's made you a little
fuzzy.
No,
this is number 65. This is Rebooting News number 65.
Yes.
Time to retire.
Right. This is the AARP show.
Next time we're going to be on Medicare.
Right. Next time it's Route 66, so we'll be like sprinting across
really
the country.
Really cool. All right, guys. Nice to see you, Jay.
All right, Dave.
Seconds.
Good luck healing from your bike fall,
maybe
and
I'll
we'll see you next week.
Next week. Thanks. Bye.